This podcast is supported by Podcast Labs, Bournemouth's full-service podcast production and marketing agency.
Social media, video, blogs, there's no end of new technology which can help put you in the driving seat of your marketing. But there's lots of opportunities. Sometimes you might think it's too much, but how do you choose? How do you understand? How do you know what's right for you? Mark Masters is head of the ID Group, and he is expert in this area, and he helps you identify how to decide what's the right choice for you, what choices you should make, what you need to do to not spend your whole life. I mean, let's face it, we can spend our whole lives doing social media, but how do you work out which is the right social media, which choices you should make? Please do review us on iTunes. Please let other people know about it if you're listening through any other mechanisms. And if you've got any thoughts, questions, please do let us know through the 10th Degree website. And also, if you've got any ideas of people who you think we ought to be interviewing, people who have got some great ideas that we can get on the podcast and get the answers that you're after. Thanks. I'm here today with Mark Masters. One way to describe Mark would be he's a force of nature. Another is he's a guy that gets things done. But he's also the founder of the ID Group, which is an agency that specializes in content marketing. And he's the founder of the You Are the Media communities in both Bournemouth and now Bristol. So Mark, you do marketing, but if I'm entirely honest, in your case, I'm not quite sure what that means. So what's marketing to you? I mean, you've got content marketing. What is that?
So the main thing, that's a good intro.
Yeah, thanks.
Yeah. Well done. The way that I look at it all today is, so marketing, let's break it down. The principles are still the same as what we were all when we were little kids. People put messages in front of us, so we will buy and then we will tell other people. So that's a starter. And when it comes to content marketing is all around, very, very much around how we can use these spaces that are in front of us today and where we can say something that adds value to somebody else's life or to their business, where we can be more useful and where we can be helpful. So we're not necessarily sitting there banging the drum. Content marketing is a way where we find a narrative so people will buy from us. It just so happens we got all these lovely little places in front of us to put our messages. We find a way where we can be compelling, useful, make people laugh and enjoy what we say to them. That's a big thing that I believe in, and that's how people stick around. That's a good start, isn't it?
Yeah, that's really good. That's a really good start. I mean, when you say useful in terms of you being able to sell stuff to people, or useful in terms of you being able to enhance other people's lives using this?
Yeah, that's a good way of putting it. I'd say both. I always feel uncomfortable. We can't really sell. It's still okay to sell. And we can still be useful in terms of being there for somebody else. So when they're ready to step forward, they trust us. It feels safe. It feels as though we're not pulling the wool over somebody's eyes.
I suppose traditionally we've got quite cynical, perhaps, about the way the relationship that we have within marketing. And we just think, you know, you're just trying to sell stuff to us. And especially as new generations have just had this around them all the time. What content marketing enables you to do is to try and redress the balance in terms of not just being this barefaced capitalist, but somebody a little bit more important in their lives.
Yeah, that's right. So we've sometimes, you know, we've confused this word marketing with advertising and putting a message in front of somebody by any means necessary. But what we have today is this abundance of spaces. We just need to learn how we use it properly. It's like me and you now doing a podcast. You know, mm-hmm. I mean, it's just a means of, I've been recording since 2015 in terms of the podcast medium. So I'm better now, so I can talk to you. So it sounds a little bit more entertaining if somebody's listening rather than if you're asking the same questions 4 years ago. And I'm like, Anthony, can I have a glass of water, please?
Yeah. Well, I'm glad you said that, because I'm really reliant on you to bring this episode up. Because
that's
it's going to be rubbish otherwise. You've got to pull your A game out.
I'm expecting Limey. Look at
high-level professionalism from
you
today.
I'm setting a precedent there, aren't I? By saying, yeah, Anthony. I've been doing this for 4 years. It becomes an absolute pro when I've kind of set myself up for a huge fall. But no, that's it. The serious point to all this is that, look, we have all these places to broadcast from, and this happens to be a podcast. It doesn't have to be squeezing people down a funnel. That's the thing. It doesn't mean we got to we are doing this as a means to an end. For instance, it doesn't mean that you are doing this to sell people that will join the Silicon South Network, or I'm finding a way to shoehorn in things to get people to buy. I'll do that at the end.
Okay. Yeah, and then we'll come back to that. Don't worry, you'll get your slot. Don't worry. But before I ask my next question, I need to start this off with a classic joke.
Here we go.
Okay, ready?
I'm ready.
Okay, knock, knock.
Who's that?
Interrupting sheep.
Interrupting sheep. Isn't he good?
There you go.
Isn't he?
And there is a reason why I've pulled old jokes out
that?
Of the bag.
Why?
Because you've written a book called The Content Revolution. And in that book, you say that marketing used to be about interrupting the masses. But now times have changed. And the only differentiation that we have as businesses are the stories we tell. And I'm just interested about how they've changed. What is that big change?
The big change is the ability to do it and to share. And we use this word story and a narrative loosely. And a big thing that's changed is that it doesn't cost anything to do this. When we have places called blogs and we have places to put a voice, but the real skill is to find a thread of something that we believe in, that's in our heart, that does align with our business, that we can sell from and build people around. And the beauty is that we can come back to it time and time again. As long as we can still read, there's always going to be a place for the long form content. But it's how we use audio, it's how we use video, it's how we use writing. In a way, listen, this is why it's a brilliant time. This is why, would we have been the same 20 years ago? Before all social media and everything else? Because I'm from the old ad world, yeah. I'm from a world where I am paid to lie to you. Where I am paid to lie to you to make you buy.
Yeah.
And I will show graphs and arrows, and I worked in the agency world in London, and that's all I ever did. So when things like analytics comes in, I'll find a way to manipulate it so there's always an arrow going to the top right. But were we like this 10 or so years ago? We were like, this is the best time to be in marketing now, guys. This is great because you can advertise whatever on buses and all the stuff that we've got. There must be saying 25, 50 odd years ago. I genuinely think it's a great place today that we've never had this before.
Well, I wanted to ask you about that because I was thinking back in terms of change, what really is it that's changed? So cast your mind back. Let's go back to the daddy of modern advertising, David Ogilvy. So he came up with the man in the Hathaway shirt, which I'm sure you probably know. The idea of this is it was a bit of a, you know?
I'm nodding my head, but in reality, I'm...
You haven't a clue what I'm talking about. Okay, well... Well, but that's because you're paid to lie. And you did it really, really well, but I've just caught you out. Okay, so the man in the Hathaway shirt was a classic. It was David Ogilvy's, you know him?
Yeah.
Founder of Ogilvy and Mather and whatever else. So he was going to a shoot for a fairly small client, but he thought they're steady payers, want to keep them going, haven't got massive budget, and was just going along for a standard man in a shirt type photo opportunity. And he stopped on the way and he went into a dime store and picked up a few 50 cent eye patches. And when he went to the shoot, he went to the guy and he gave them an eye patch, said, put this on the model and just humor me for a bit, just do a few of those just so I can see what that's like. And then you get on with your business. So when it came out, the man in the Hathaway shirt is a man with a fine moustache, I have to say, kind of standing in a very upright pose in the kind of nice clubbable bespoke shirt making emporium with an eye patch. And the whole thing is, it suddenly goes, and it was just said, the man in the Hathaway shirt. And everyone's going, well, who is it? Why has he got an eye patch? What's he done? Has he, you know, has he just poked himself kind of with his pencil sharpener, or has he been shark fishing? What is it? But it was all about creating story. And I kind of linked it back into your idea of saying that it's all about trying to develop stories, which comes back into the whole idea of what has changed. It's the fundamental messaging that we have sort of the same. And that's just the mediums we have to speak about, which is where the real change is.
Bingo, you've said it there. And that's it. The way that we share and we tell it hasn't changed. It's just the mechanism to distribute this message has changed. And I think that's brilliant, which is why I get really excited. And you do a better impression than me, don't you, when it talks to getting excited and animated.
Well, I've got to say, you are matching me pound for pound for the amount of arm waving that's been going on in this room.
But this is the thing. So the way that we share a narrative hasn't changed. It's the place, it's how it's distributed is changed. And that's the brilliant place today. And that's what gets me enthused, is because the small business goes head to the head with the big guy. Yeah. And when you're a small business, you are more nimble, and there isn't a chain of command to go through before something gets approved. It gives us flexibility, it lets us be brave, and it enables us to say the things that other people haven't. And that's why I get really excited, and that's why I genuinely do believe there is a place where we can share this narrative. Again, here's an important thing today. Let me just get this caveat in. It's not just this thing of wistfully telling stories and that we're told we live in this world where we're told to follow our dreams and everything else. Because if I followed my dreams, I would be traveling to all 92 football clubs and I'd be writing an AFC Bournemouth fanzine and an A5 side. 48-page A5 fanzine.
Have you ever done anything like that?
Yeah, I did it. I did it at school. That's what I wanted to do. I wanted to be a journalist when growing up. And so, but the thing I'm trying to say is, we can't necessarily follow our dreams, but because the dreams can end up becoming expensive hobbies. But if we figure out how these spaces work, for instance, I started writing properly. I started blogging in January 2012, is that enables us a place to come back to hone our skills, to hone our craft, to build people around our message, that enables us for people to trust us, that enables people to think, yeah, I'm going to stick around. I'm going to be part of this. And that's one of the reasons I set out with the side project thing that I set up, was to prove this, I've spent a life being a human cannonball and most things I've done haven't worked. But if I can share with people, look, it works like this, I wanted to effectively become my own best case study by saying, this is how it all works. This is what you can do within your business. Again, all this stuff allows us to connect. Yeah. The reason I write, the reason I, you know, do a podcast and all the other stuff goes with it, is that there's a reason for it as well. And that's the same for all of us. As long as we've got a reason to do it, it doesn't break us and it doesn't, you know, these are brilliant training grounds at the end of the day. You know, the more that we present and everything else, and look where opportunities come from, and other people that are inviting others to be on podcasts, or people that set up their own podcast, which is great, things like the Podcast Labs are doing.
Respect.
See
respect
what we're
to the
doing?
Podcast Labs.
See
like
what
it,
we're
like
doing?
It, like it. For those of you not in the room, Kelly, who runs the Podcast Labs, is in the corner smiling nicely to herself. Well done, Mark.
Anyway, there we go.
Let me pick up on that. So you've mentioned brave. And I think there are people who would love to do this. And there are people who have got the will and impetus to do it,
yeah,
but don't necessarily have the knowledge or necessarily the wherewithal. So when you sit down with a client and somebody comes to you and says, Mark, I need to do content marketing. How do you break that down? How do you start by getting somebody to understand, okay, step one, step two, step three?
You start off by, first of all, getting buy-in throughout the company. Yeah. You start off by getting buy-in first and making people realize that, like, the biggest challenge that's for all of us, for our businesses and everything else today, is sameness, right? And so a good starting point is that there has to be buy-in from within a company. Because I found out over the years is that what happens is that people are very happy to pay for a hired gun. So a hired gun will come in and write content and post and distribute, and nobody's following up. No one has a responsibility. No one is accountable for anything. Yeah. So what happens is the narrative that's being created is just the same as everything else. It doesn't say anything different. For instance, say a recruitment company and the message is based around how to write a good CV. Thing is that everybody said that. So the way to start is that, is a company prepared to make that step to say things that other people aren't? For instance, you know, there are really strong places out there to read about when it comes to recruitment, or read, or whatever that's out that covers the basics. How can a company share something that is theirs that they can take responsibility for and recognize, and they can share something that other people are not saying? Or alternatively, it's all been said before. We're just shaping it in a way where we can put our voice and our stamp to it. And when you pick up on that word, they're brave. Can we say things that not everybody else is saying, or whether that is challenging ourselves? And it can be done. I don't just want to sit here and talk about things that it's you're just following a diatribe that everybody has said. But if there is a way that if a company can kind of step forward and find a way that not everybody has said something before, that's a real position of strength, and that starts to become a differentiator for any business of any size.
And when you start talking to people about that, do you find that they sort of know themselves what that differentiator could be, or is it up to you to try and impose an idea on them, or is it about teasing out things that they already know?
Yeah, that's a good way of putting it, is teasing out. An easy thing to think about is that there's always a question like, we are dot dot dot, and how can a company answer that? We are dot dot dot. And you can't You can't step into this by saying, well, we are creative, or we are customer driven, or we are unique, or we create bespoke packages for eloquent companies. So, and what you do is that you switch it and you look at these verbs and you find the one word that you believe in and that you stand for. So for instance, if you are for instance, on my side, it was all about the one word that I, it always changes. So the one word that I go around the edges, or one of the things may be loyalty. And that word of loyalty, again, but how does that relate to a marketing company? But if this is the thing that you stand for, loyalty, then there are lots of strands from that, such as independence and ownership and community and all these things that come from that. So a good place to start for a company or to whoever's listening to say, right, what is this one word? What are these words or single words that I stand for that are just not, it's like being back at school and GCSE, but it's not just describing words where we're telling everybody how good we are, because that goes back to old ways that we always used to be with advertising and everything else. By telling everybody these great big words, we're not really. Whereas if you find these specific words, these verbs that relate to who we are, what we stand for, what we believe in, we start going down these really interesting rabbit holes. And that's how we do put our neck on the line and how we can say things that everybody else is saying. So it does come from a process. But again, it's really, really difficult, because you're asking people to change habits, change behavior, because it's really tough. Because if you're a company or a web company or whatever it is, and you're seeing other companies bombarding you with messages, buy tickets for events, come to this, workshops, seminars that are based on pay-per-click or stuff like that. I find it can be really overawing, because all you're doing is looking over your shoulder. And it does take time. When I say time, it just means that adjustment of a mentality by saying, right, we're going to start looking at this particular angle and this approach, rather than thinking we're going to be fishing in the same pool with everybody else.
Can I pick up on that point that you said about one word?
Yeah.
You also slipped in there, you said verb. So I just wondered, do you mean verbs by the one word, or can it be any word? And what does that word signify? What does that word symbolise?
Yeah, so the word should symbolise
this. And is it one or is it multiple ones?
No, I try and look at my side, it always changes. But is there something that to stick with? Is there something that a company can say, no, if we trace it back to this whole ethos that we are all about, can we stick with this? It may be like something like empowerment, for instance. Can it be that we represent empowerment? And then how can you find strands of that that can be aligned with their business? Yeah. It could be a way that a company recruits or something else like that. Or it could be a way that a company brings people together. Come back to that kind of recruitment company case study or whatever it is. And so here we go. So if there is a recruitment company that says we want to be seen as exemplary when it comes to recruitment, or we want to be seen as a one-stop shop, or we want to be seen as a cut above the rest when it comes to recruitment, what you do is reframe things, such as that thing of we believe in empowerment and empowering our clients and empowering our candidates, so people can get the best employees, and also employees can have a path for their future. And you start to figure out from these words that then starts to take us down different avenues. Because what we're trying to do is say, come back, we said at the beginning, how we're saying stuff that's useful, that's of interest, that's helping other people. But say it in a way that doesn't really fit the same bucket as everybody else.
So let's sit with that word empowerment for a moment. So if that's your chosen word, do you then start building a content marketing strategy around, let's define this word empowerment, let's own the word empowerment, and let's try and be known as the empowerment people? Yeah. And then that's what you're doing in your podcast. You're talking around the topic of empowerment.
But you said it, Andy, that's it. You own these words, and you do own these words, and you find these words that you think about, this is what we're all about. So it all traces back, because then you can see if you're meandering or going down these particular paths that are irrelevant. As long as you can come back to something that you can stoically stand next to and say, yeah, we are going to own this word, because this is what makes us stand out and sound a little bit different from everybody else, who will say they are unique, creative, challenging, whatever it is. It doesn't mean anything.
Do you think that that word has got to align to your brand? Or is it just words which, I suppose, kind of align more to your intent, what you want to do and be as a company? Or are they the same things? Or
interesting. It has to relate to us, align with our values and our beliefs, and also how we do build our businesses, because that becomes far more interesting when we're talking about things from the heart and what we can make a stand for, and those moments that we put our flag in the sand and saying, this is me and this is what I'm all about. you know, again, this is still sales, this is still marketing, but it's all about, it's about recognizing something that is easy to make an association with, that sits within our hearts and it sits within it, what we believe in and what we're trying to, otherwise it becomes really tough. And it is really tough because we're seeing, you know, we've reached peak WordPress, and we always hear Mark Schaefer talked a few years ago about content shock, meaning that there is far too much out there for people's attention spans and everything else. So we are in a tough place. But if we find these things that we can step forward, because that's how we find momentum, we have to do it. Then we come back rather than me reinventing myself as though I'm the man that specializes in magic tricks and public speaking. You kind of have
to. Do you do magic tricks?
Oh, I've got an awesome hand trick.
Oh, really?
Doesn't make good for somebody who's listening to this who's walking a dog now, though, does it?
No, well, I'm happy to see that.
Bloody later. Good.
Yeah, okay. Can we see that? The media? Because you are the media. You've got.
When we finish this, I'm going to show you it. Good, okay. We've got a good table in front of us here.
Okay.
Which is also at Podcast Labs.
Sorry, I've kind of diverted you slightly away from that and probably completely thrown
you back
train
in the zone. Come on.
Okay. So the word thing, just before we leave that,
yeah,
is one way maybe to look at it is that if you take brand, lots of people are encouraged to come up with brand values and sort of,
yeah,
you know, words which, yeah, sum up the brand. If you had, let's not throw those away, but if you have those as your top level categories, could the words that you are focusing on be, as it were, a subgenre of that? Which means you can change the words after a while. So you can exhaust empowerment and you can spend 6 months on empowerment. But actually, the next 6 months could all be about healthy living if that fits in with your brand. But again, it's not necessarily in your brand values, but it fits around there. But it means that you try and avoid getting into a stasis or just only being, oh God, he's going on about blooming empowerment again, but actually trying to change it. Do you think you should be changing these words every once in a while?
Yeah, I do think about being fluid. Yeah, there's a good guy called Chris Brogan, and he kind of does it every year. Like, say, my three words for this year are, because what we're trying to do, I'm a big fan of this live lab that we have. Yeah, so we're always tweaking. It's always how we're pivoted. I always ask, you know, maybe this is an age thing now. I'm always asking myself how you can still be relevant. So why was You Are the Media that I started in 2013? Why is that still here? And it's this whole ability to pivot and change. So we have to think beyond when you talk about branding, you know, spending time and months and weeks doing a perfect motif or a strap line and everything else. Today, that's irrelevant. What has to stand strong with it is the values and the principles and the values that we have within what we're creating and how we can stand by it, because we have these platforms and the media now to share that message, which is why we have to think far beyond making sure that About Us page is right, when really that is, there's a lot more important things to do that comes to consistency, that comes to voice, that comes to the narrative, that comes to creating something that you can come back to time and time again, where you don't get bored with it.
Well, that reminds me of something else, which before I ask that question, I've got another joke for you.
Here we go.
This one is truly awful.
But it's going to link.
Yeah, it's going to link. Yeah, it's going to be. This is all thought through. It's going to link. Okay.
Pro.
Joke. And it's on topic. Okay. Why did the marketer break up with her boyfriend?
I don't know. Why did the marketer break up with her boyfriend?
Lack of engagement.
and you did that with a straight face.
Is that actually a genuine laugh? I was expecting tumbleweed coming through that moment. Oh, that's brilliant. That's made my day. Okay, so engagement. You advocate that you should become the media.
Oh, yeah.
What does that mean?
Here we go. So becoming a media represents what we touched upon a little bit earlier, where you become the media, where you can control these spaces that are yours. And when I say this, this is not about thinking, oh, I'm going to play by the rules here from Google, or I'm going to sit here and build my little space here on LinkedIn. Becoming the media is having the control of these places where we can direct the message. Wow. So we're talking things like our blog, because we get people to come to our place, and even this, the own space that nobody knows who owns it. Things like email. So how we can nurture and love people becoming the media is having the control of the spaces that they have ownership of, that other people can gather around. And then we have the ability to address people directly. That comes into your engagement pun.
So how do you go about trying to choose which channels you want to operate in? Should you try and do all of it,
yeah,
a little bit, some of it? How do you decide?
My answer to that question is you find one space and you get good at it. but it may be what's comfortable with you, for instance. So like Trisha Lewis, for instance, great lady, but she's an actress. She's a brilliant presenter. So her natural space is audio, yeah? The Make It Real podcast, that's perfect for her. You find a space that you are comfortable with, because what we see as well is that people that start with gusto, release 20 podcast episodes in one block. How many you released in one block? You release like a ton of effort into something and then it goes quiet. So for me, it was writing. The reason I chose writing was because there was no risk involved. Yeah. So I had a WordPress website. I could use this platform to write. So it didn't cost me anything. My biggest investment was time. So we find a place that is easier to accumulate people around what we're trying to say. For instance, I started writing in 2012, 2013, I introduced you to the media. And then only in 2016, I then pivoted to another place, which was to create a live event. Because only when we can introduce different media is when the other one is working. But the only reason the live event worked was because I was writing, and because there was an audience that was in front of me. So, but I understand how really tempting it, or how overawing it becomes, how we need to be using live video and everything else that we read and messages that we're bombarded with, how one place is more nobler than the other. Whereas let's just get good at embracing being average at the beginning in a space, accept that it's going to be a vacuum where no one is going to be standing beside us for quite a while. But over time, the more confident we get, the more that we create, the more that people stand together with us, allows us to tap into our audience and know what people want, because then it becomes easier when the ask comes that you want to try something new. It's only one after the other.
Yeah. What about if you're in this position where you could be tempted to think, okay, where I want to be is where my audience is. And if my audience is all on Instagram, then that's where I should be. But if you're utterly rubbish at Instagram and actually you're really good at writing, or you're good at doing podcasts, what do you think? Do you think you just need to stick to what it is that you know and hope that you attract a more audience, because you're more likely to actually deliver if you feel comfortable doing it, rather than trying to put yourself in a position where you're forcing it? Because I think the thing you talked to earlier on in terms of the fact that you were able to pivot in 2016 and start doing live events because you built up that audience. And the word that came into my head is trust. You know, what actually you've done is you've built trust, and that's really hard to do. Do you have any tips around any of that?
First of all, when it comes to our choice, just come back to what we're just saying, is that we've only got three choices when you talk about the places and narrative. Do we use Instagram or whatever? Is that our three choices are this: we can either write, we can do video, we can do audio. That's it. Choose one and then you lean into it. But this thing that you mentioned around trust, yeah, is so important. You know, a thing I always talk about is the Edelman Trust Barometer. Very briefly, Edelman Trust, biggest PR company in the world. They do a survey every year, 33,000 people, 28 countries, and it relates to who we trust. It comes down to the media, business, and government. Come back to what we're talking about here about trust and how important that is. So where we are is that trust is on its knees, and we all understand that the way that government, media, and businesses are. However, what this presents is a level playing field. So if we're saying that nobody trusts anybody else, then it comes back to, again, with small businesses, then we're in a really good position to kind of set the precedent, to say something, to have something. And because in the really refreshing thing in the latest report, in the 29 report, was this thing about celebrating the normal, in that people are prepared to trust other people like us, rather than think we have to follow people and recognize that people like Gary Vaynerchuk and people like that are the be all and end all of these people that we should be following. Whereas now what's happening is that people are trusting people like us, which then comes back to, well, if we can nurture these places, writing, audio, whatever it is, and the independence and championing the independence that we have, okay, we will never have the budgets of the BBC or Lego or whatever it is to create stuff and do really cool videos, because the budget isn't behind it. But we also know that if we're saying things that enables us to strike a chord with others, people are prepared to stand with us. That leads to trust, that leads to having a friend for life.
There's one thing which I picked up from having a look on your website earlier on, is that what came across was the heart of content for you is your blog. Which echoes with what you're talking about at the moment. And you've sort of said why it's so important. But the one thing you also mentioned in there was about a sense of precipitation. And you had a very nice model, and I thought that's interesting, mainly because you studied geography.
I bloody well did.
So have you been delving into your own old geography studies and kind of coming up with content marketing metaphors from them?
Done Oxbow Lakes. Done that.
I love an Oxbow Lake. Talked about one of my
soils.
Yeah.
Drop that in the book. Uh-huh. Isn't that interesting? So I did geography at university. I couldn't find any way that I could use it in a professional world. And I shoehorn it now into what I use when I create articles.
That degree is not wasted.
Wistfully holding on to talking about stalactites and stalactites.
Oh, I'm looking forward to that.
Human geography though. I don't know why I'm going down the road.
But anyway, precipitation, this idea, yes. Because I think you were talking about the fact that you write something and it precipitates out there. Can you just explain what that means?
So I was talking about this whole idea that everything has to have a source. Yeah. So what this example that you're talking about here is that I was using your blog, listening as an example, whereas here is a source for everything. Everything starts in this place. Yeah. And then from that source, it can then be broken down into so many ways. For instance, when we talk about rain and how that becomes audio or becomes social posts, and how the rainwater, everything else, and under soil and everything else becomes the videos that we use and all these different treatments. But everything, this is why it's so valuable of having this central place for our thoughts and our ideas, is that it can be broken down into so many different areas. So I'm a huge believer in doing the minimum amount possible, but getting the maximum return. So what everything that I write every week, it becomes an audio. We've got the Bite Size, You Are the Media Bite Size podcast, which is me reading the blog, which then becomes a LinkedIn live video down at my beach hut, down in Sandbanks. That also becomes the social posts. That also becomes the 200-word micro stories that sit there in LinkedIn as well. So from having this one place, there are so many different places where this narrative sits that's written, that's audio, this video. That's it.
There's a really interesting book by a guy called Marcus Buckingham.
Along with David Ogilvy, another blog.
But it's just, I've over excelled at remembering his name. The name of the book escapes me. But his point is that we are brought up to try and fix our faults. The way in which we're educated, the way in which we're schooled at work is that if we can do that a bit better, you can be better. And we look at other people who are really good at things. And you know, say you look at an athlete and say, if you train and train and train and train, see, you could be more like that. But the reality is we're never going to be that person, because his point is we're actually naturally good at stuff that we're good at. And you're far better off just focusing on that and thinking, actually, my natural talent is doing this, and trying to just be realistic about your boundaries, because otherwise you just waste time. If you can just focus on what you're good at and try and bring other people around you, you'll do yourselves a lot of favors.
Let me just pick up on this, what you say here. So there's a really interesting thing that I learned. So Mark Schaefer, author of good books like Known and Marketing Rebellion, so he came to Bournemouth in May 2019. And here's a really interesting thing, just following up what you're saying here. He was talking about the importance of learning in plain view, in plain sight of everybody. So what we're doing is that we're not necessarily saying that we have all the answers, but this just becomes a way of documenting down what we're observing, what we're seeing. And that's a real strong point as well, rather than saying, look, this is where we are, right? So we've always told that we have to know the answers, right? We have to know how SEO works and everything else. But if we can say, this is what I'm kind of learning, this is what I'm finding, how this goes, and how this path is kind of leading us, that becomes far more compelling, because what you're doing is you're creating this scrap because you're going along. Again, whether it's audio, whether it's video, whether it's writing, is this whole thing of learning in plain sight. And I love that. Quick little story, quick little anecdote. So in 2018, just before the first You Are the Media conference, it was great. There was a conference that was happening, but what was happening was that I was burning myself out. And I hated it. And the day after the conference, rather than wallowing in the love and everything else from the day and the messages, I remember just sitting on the sofa, and I fell asleep from dropping my kids off at school at half eight, quarter to nine. I was asleep until 3 o'clock. And that's not good. But what I'm trying to highlight here is that we can't necessarily do this until we're blue in the face. There has to come a point where there was a give. The give for me was that I know I couldn't do all this on my own. So I had to bring other people on board. There's somebody else that helps us out with the podcast. There's other things that goes on with the live events and everything else. And it's how you find those other people around you. It's so important to find your allies and the people that will support you as well. And, you know, again, this all relates to marketing still, but this is also a very lonely journey because it becomes so dispiriting. Say if you're just doing these podcasts or whatever we're doing and nobody's there. And that's a really tough place. But the whole thing comes down to saying something with heart and what we believe in so people can think, yeah, this is interesting. I'll come back for more. And then that allows you to kind of champion and to take causes on a wider level, because all that people want is other people that feel safe, it feels comfortable, and someone else has got our back.
Mm. It's funny, that was there's another thing, Simon Sinek, who is, his latest work is all on this at the moment in terms of how businesses traditionally, you know, they plan in annual cycles and everything is set, and there's these arbitrary metrics which are put up in place. And what that does is it kind of propagates an environment of selfishness. Because you're worried about not hitting your targets. And so therefore, you don't communicate to other people because they might do better than you. And that's going to, you know, detract from what you're doing. And he's trying to advocate this much more open planning style of, rather than thinking about what happens in terms of growth over a year, don't worry about those kind of artificial timeframes. Just think about in terms of your people, how you work with your people. This is really going off topic. But anyway, it's a really interesting book, Simon Sinek. Have a look at that. That's really good. So,
not sponsored.
Not sponsored at all. But anyway, very interesting. So we probably should be kind of getting on a little bit, but there's time for one more joke.
Let's do it.
You'll be disappointed without it. So I met this guy at an event recently and I said, what do you do? He said, I make fireworks and rockets. And I said, how's it going? He said, business is booming.
Dude, isn't that good?
Thank you for... you know, giving me some pity laugh. Humoring you. Great. So, but there's a point to it because you talk about boom moments. Hmm. Can you tell me what a boom moment is? Can you remember what a boom moment is? Or is that just something that you wrote once and you've kind of moved
but
on?
But listen, I'm sure it was just something that came into my head once.
You know, you've written hundreds of thousands of words over the years and here I am expecting you to have remembered all of them. Okay, you were talking about finding your niche.
Okay.
Why should people believe in you? And then you create boom moments. So is that points that people can rally about?
Yeah, that's right. These boom moments are these moments that we know where we're saying something that not everybody else is saying, but other people can rally around. Find these topics that relate to what we do, but they strike a chord with others. For instance, everything I talk about that relates to audience and to build and this thing around loyalty and people to think, I want to stay around here for a little bit more to hear a bit more what this is all about. That's what all this relates to, are these moments that become shared that is relatable to other people as well. The most challenging thing for all of us is to make all this difficult stuff sound simple. That's really tough, but because all we've done for years is try and make ourselves sound more knowledgeable to someone else, so we have to use bigger superlatives than someone else. Whereas this whole simplicity of what we're trying to do or express ourselves in simple terms, I realize, is super tough.
Just before we leave this, how do you avoid getting too salesy, or how do you make sure you're not being boring? Yeah. How do you avoid that? Oh, I've got some people, so I'm just going to talk about my new product in here.
Yeah.
Is there a temptation? Do people kind of fall into that trap?
Yeah, there is. But it's how we break it down. For instance, there's the email, the You Are The Media email that's sent every Thursday morning. If you're finding a narrative and you can be consistent with it, it's okay. For instance, the email I use, I still sell. It's just that 80-20 rule where 80% is based on the value that I'm giving to other people to take from and learn and think about, and 20% that is still there to sell. That's still all right. But as long as it's framed in the right way, rather than you looking to relentlessly take from somebody else, take as in somebody spending money with you. So if you can think of a way where you can, this thing of adding value, of being useful that we talked about earlier, then it is okay. It is okay to find those moments. For instance, imagine if, so I've got the conference, You Are The Media conference next year, is that a tough thing would be, I would be in an extremely vulnerable place if there was no Thursday email, there was no 1,500, 2,000 word piece that is associated with the email every week. And all I did was just pop up in February, March next year, selling tickets for the conference. I would be in a far more desperate and vulnerable place because I have nothing to do. My only goal I have is to get people to buy as quickly as possible. Whereas if you can put these breadcrumbs down, that becomes safe, that becomes okay, That's my ask to get people to come to the conference is my ask because, you know, this is the stuff that's readily available and it's free to us and everything else. All this stuff takes time to do. It becomes easy. Again, that thing we talked about of trust, it becomes easier for someone to step forward if they feel a part of something that they get. It's my unwritten contract I have with other people that I will send you an email every Thursday morning at 6:30.
And that consistency is really important just in terms of maintaining that trust. It's not that you're expecting anyone to go, hey, look, I've just read this. I must go and get some business from Mark. It's just more you're maintaining a conversation. So you do actually have something that you want people to get engaged with, then they're a willing partner already.
You're there for them. And that's a good way of saying it. That's a really good way that you put it there, yeah.
Sales by osmosis was the thing that popped into my head earlier. So before we leave, what's going on with you and the media then? How does the year look?
So the whole plan is that I realised that everything for you and the media was very sporadic. It was all over the place. It's been going for 6 years into its seventh year. But what was happening that I wasn't necessarily practicing what I was preaching. There was a blog in one place and another website. There was an audio chat somewhere else. How can I consolidate everything and bring everything into one place? We had a focus group that was asking people what they wanted. So like the start of a Netflix series, I've put the entire 2020 program of activity that's now on the website on youarethemedia.co.uk. So what You Are The Media represents going forward is this marketing and media learning and training community. That's what it's all about. Yeah. And so we'll keep the lunch clubs going for next year. We've got the conference in May as well. We're having new workshops that carry on throughout the year as well. It's by creating this place that people feel that they like to be a part of and just being there for them, because you very simply, you learn better together rather than saying you're doing constant webinars or you're doing training online and everything else. I do like the idea of having a place that's by the seaside that people can feel a part of, that they enjoy, that there's camaraderie, that there's togetherness, and people feel a part of something. And that's a big thing in all this. I like this idea that people feel connected to something where they feel valued, where we can all celebrate together, and the world feels a much stronger place.
Oh, that's a really nice place to leave. See? Youarethemedia.co.uk, is it?
So youarethemedia.co.uk, it's all there. Yeah, everything's there.
Mark, thank you. That's been brilliant. Really, really interesting and a really good understanding of what content marketing is and lots of fantastic tips. So thank you,
Anthony. Really appreciate you inviting me on.
I hope you enjoyed the episode. There's more information about all of our guests and all the topics they talk about at 10thdegree.co.uk. And also, please do review us. We really want to share the lessons and the advice that's given as widely as possible, and this really helps us to get that message out there. Thanks.